فلا مضل له ومن يضلله فلا هادي له وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله أما بعد. Okay, so last week we talked about, like we said, those people that are prohibited to marry, and we also talked about side point was what we're allowed to look at when we propose, and the last thing we did was the what? The status of marriage. We did that at the beginning, yes, the status of marriage. Okay, okay. Now we get on to the actual marriage. Okay, the actual marriage. Now, we defined in the fiqh class that we took something called shurut and something called arkan. Because they're new brothers, we have to define them over again. What is a shart and what is a rukun? Okay. What is a shart and what is a rukun? There's a difference between the two. A shart is, Imran, a precondition to the act. Okay, so for example, salah has some shurut, some sharts to them. Amongst them is you have to have wudu. This is a shart to the salah because it's before it. And then there's a rukun which is inside the act itself. It's not before it. So for example, a rukun of salah is that you have to read Fatiha. Okay? We're going over this because we have to now get into the shart of nikah and the rukun of nikah. What are the preconditions to marriage and what are the actual conditions in the marriage contract? Okay? So everyone understands this. The shurut are preconditions. Shart, singular. Shurut, plural. Shart, singular. Shurut, plural. These are preconditions to any act. Without them, no act is complete. Okay? You need to have the shurut in order to do the act. So prayer, for example, salah, it has some shurut to it. Amongst them is that we must face the qibla. Amongst them is that we have to have wudu. Amongst them is that we have to, we have to be properly clothed. These are shurut. Are they inside the prayer? No. Because the prayer starts with Allahu Akbar. Okay? The prayer starts with Allahu Akbar. Can you tell the dude after? Maybe it'll be better, you know. So this is the beginning of the prayer and the ending of it is the taslim. So anything inside the prayer is called a rukun. Anything before it is called a shart. Is this distinction clear? Okay? Both are essential for every act, for any act. But the difference is that shart comes before and rukun comes inside the actual act. Now nikah has five shurut to it. Nikah has five shurut to it. Five preconditions to this act. Okay? We're going to go over them one by one. The first one is to specify the two spouses, the male and the female. Specifying the two spouses, okay? It's common sense. But this will exclude, for example, if a person has more than one daughter. And he tells a person, or he tells the male that I'm going to marry you, my daughter, without specifying which one. Then this is not a proper shart. He has to specify which daughter, if there are more than one that are of marriageable age and, you know, they are not married as of yet. Okay, so the point is both the bride and the groom, if you like, the male and the female, they have to be specified. It's common sense. You don't have to go into the evidence of this. Okay? The second one, the second shart, the second precondition that is necessary is that the male and the female are allowed to be married to one another. What does this remove? This removes what we talked about in the last lecture. Okay? What did we take in the last lecture? Those people that cannot marry one another. Okay? So if they're related by blood, they're related by marriage, they're related by breastfeeding, foster mother. Okay? These type of relationships are not allowed to marry with one another. So the second condition is that there is no boundary or prohibition for the two getting married. And we talked about these boundaries and prohibitions in the last lecture. Okay? So far so clear. Easy conditions. Right? First one is specify male and female. Second one is that both are Islamically allowed to get married. There is no prohibition between the two. There might be foster brother or sister, or the husband might already be married to the girl's wife. Okay, and this is temporary prohibition. You cannot marry a woman and her wife at the same time. We discussed this last lecture. Those notes that we took last time. The third condition. Now we get into a little of detail. The third shart is that there must be a wali present. There must be a wali present. Okay, who is a wali? A wali is a guardian of the girl, okay? A wali is a guardian of the girl, one who is in charge of the affairs of the girl. Okay, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam stated, "La nikaha illa bi wali." There is no nikah except with a wali. And this is a hadith reported by Abu Dawud, At-Tirmidhi, An-Nisa, Ibn Majah, Al-Muwatta, and almost every book of Sunan and Ahkam. Okay, and Al-Bukhari has a chapter title, Bab la nikah illa wali. The chapter la nikah except with a wali. No nikah except with a wali. So even Bukhari put this hadith in his chapter title, not in his actual book. And there is no doubt about the authenticity of this hadith. It is clearly an authentic hadith that the Prophet said, there is no nikah except with a wali. And Aisha radiallahu anha reported, any woman that marries herself, reported that the Prophet said, any woman that marries herself without a wali, then her marriage is batil, it is void, it is null. Her marriage is null, her marriage is null, three times. The Prophet stated, and Aisha herself reported this hadith, that any woman that marries herself without a wali, without the permission of her wali, then her nikah, her marriage is void, null and void. And he said this three times, her marriage is batil, her marriage is batil, her marriage is batil. Very explicit, clear text that shows that it is necessary that a wali is present in the marriage. Without a wali, there is no marriage. This is a necessary shart. Without a wali, there is no marriage. Now, this is the opinion of the majority of the ulama, okay, of the Shafi'is, and the Hanbalis, and the Malikis, and the Zahiris, and the Ahlul Hadith. Well, the Zahiris have some difference, but in general. The Hanafis, they disagreed with this. And they said that it is allowed for a woman to marry without her wali. Okay? So they said that it is allowed for a woman to marry without her wali. And they used some evidences. We don't have time to discuss all of them. But because of the fact that this is very important, we're going to discuss one or two of the evidences. The main evidence that they use in the Quran is the verse in Surah Baqarah, which states, it's around 200 something, I don't have the verse number, which states, فَلَا تَعْضُلُوهُنَّ أَن يَنْكِحْنَ أَزْوَاجَهُنَّ. Allah is talking to the walis, and He's saying, don't prevent those women from getting married to their previous husbands. What occurred was that a wife was divorced from her husband, okay? So the wife went back to her brother, and the brother's name was Uwayman. Okay, the wife went back to her brother. Now the husband proposed again for the second time. Now we're going to come to the condition that when a woman has already been married, then she is allowed to choose her spouse. She is allowed to accept and reject the proposal. Okay, we're going to talk about that in a little while. So the man came again to propose to the woman, the same man that was married. The brother said, I gave her to you in marriage, and you entered her and then divorced her and returned her to me. I'm not going to give her back to you. Okay, in other words, it's as if you dishonored me by divorcing her again. So I'm not going to let her marry you again. Okay? So the woman wanted to marry the man. And the Prophet ﷺ was present at the time of the Sahaba, so she complained to the Prophet ﷺ about this affair, that my brother is prohibiting me from marrying my previous husband, my ex-husband. And I want to get married to him again, and he wants to marry me also. So Allah revealed in the Quran to this man, and also to this man, meaning the ummah after him, Allah revealed concerning this man, do not prevent these women from marrying their spouses again if they want to. Do not prevent these women from marrying their spouses if they want to. Now, how did the Hanafis use this verse? Who can understand? Yes. Na khiyas. Simple. What is the verse saying? Don't refuse the marriage. So, if the woman wants to marry, don't refuse. So, who has the right then? The woman. So, this is, you understand the Hanafis, how they use this verse, right? Everyone clear? Because it's important we understand the bits and pieces here. Right? Allah is talking to the men in this verse. And He is telling them, don't act as barriers. Don't prevent your women that are under your walishib, that you are their walis, don't prevent them from marrying their husbands if they want to. You don't have the right to prevent them. So how do the Hanafis use this verse then? I like interactive classes, I said this last time. We already answered, let's say someone else. They say you don't need a wali because Allah says you don't have the right to prevent them, which means that women have the right to conduct a marriage. Okay? However, this verse is a refutation against them at the same time. How is that? Who is the intelligent one? Now? No, no, no. Even we say that a wali is needed for virgins and non-virgins both. Okay? You're getting close. You're getting close. Very good, mashallah. Beaten by a little child. All of you should be ashamed. Mashallah, very intelligent. Allah is talking to the awliya. He is talking to the wali in charge of the girl. And he is telling him, don't prevent her. Which means that he has the right, and that is why he is being refused to prevent her. And Allah is talking to the men and not to the women. Allah says to the men, don't prevent them from marrying their husbands. And this shows you that the wali still has to be present. He just doesn't have the right to prevent the marriage. In this stage, which we're going to come to in 20-30 minutes, inshallah. But the wali still has to be present, and that is why Allah refers to them in the verse. You don't prevent them. You have to agree if she agrees. So he cannot say no to the girl. He cannot say no to the girl's request, but he must still be present. Okay? So this verse is in fact a refutation against them, because Allah is addressing the awliya. He is not addressing the women. So because of the fact that he had the right to prevent her, and that is why she went to the Prophet ﷺ in the first place. So the Prophet ﷺ said, no, you don't have the right to say no. You just have to say yes. So he still has to say yes. So the wali then still must be present, whether it's a virgin or a non-virgin. And the hadith is very explicit, like we said, لا نكاح إلا بولي. There is no nikah except with a wali. Okay? And another proof that the Hanafis use is the famous hadith that the non-virgin, or the one, the widowed woman, or the divorced woman, she has more rights concerning herself than the virgin woman. The non-widowed, or excuse me, the widowed woman, or the divorced woman, the woman that has been married before, and either she got divorced or her husband died, she has more rights concerning her future marriages than the wali does. And the virgin, she must also be asked, and her consent is her silence. So this is the hadith, famous hadith, everyone knows it. So how do the Hanafis use this hadith? The hadith says that she has more right than her wali. Okay? But this hadith is also a refutation against them. The fact that she has more right than her wali shows that her wali still has a right. The wali still has a right of being present and agreeing to the nikah. Okay? He doesn't have the right of saying no. The divorcee has more control over her future marriage. Okay? She can say, I want to marry this man. The wali cannot say no to that. But he must still be present and enact the marriage contract. Okay? And we're going to talk about that in more detail, but the point is that a wali must be present no matter whether the girl is a virgin or a non-virgin. The wali still must be present in the nikah. Okay? أَثَيِّبُ أَحَقُّ بِنَفْسِهَا مِنْ وَلِيِّهَا. That the thayyib, or the divorcee, or the woman that has previously been married, she has more rights concerning herself than her wali. So this is the portion that you need to know. Okay? Now, we talked about, yeah. We're discussing that a little while, okay? Now we talked about the fact that it is essential to have a wali for any marriage. It doesn't matter. No matter whether the girl's been married 20 times or no times before. A wali must be present at that marriage. Now, who is the wali? Who is the wali of the girl? Well, first of all, we have to know that the wali has seven characteristics that must be present in him. Seven characteristics. Every wali for every girl must have these seven characteristics present in him, okay? The first one is that he must be a male. The wali must be a male. There's no such thing as a female wali. Okay? The wali must be a male. The second one, he must be sane. So, an insane person is excluded. Second one is he must be sane. Third one, he must be of age, baligh. Okay? So, a child cannot act as a wali. He must be of age. Okay? Fourth one, he must be a free man. So, a slave cannot act as a wali. Okay? Fifth condition is he must be of the same religion as the girl. So, if the girl is a Christian, then her wali is also going to be a Christian. Unless, you know, there's some conditions there. But basically, this must be the same religion as the girl. If the girl is a Muslim, her wali must be a Muslim. So a convert, can her father be her wali if her father did not convert? No. Because the fifth condition is not met. They must be the same religion. Okay? Sixth condition is that he must have something called adala, which means integrity. Okay? Islamic integrity. Okay? And the seventh one is he must have it's called in Arabic rushd, which means he is capable of deciding who is a proper suitor for his daughter, the wali. Not necessarily the daughter, anyone that the wali, he must be capable of making decisions that are in the interest of the girl. Okay. Now we're going to talk about the sixth and seventh condition. The first five are pretty much clear, right? The first five are clear, right? The first one is what? Male. I mean, it's understood. I mean, no woman is going to be a wali of another woman. Second one, saying, third one, of age, makes common sense. This is in the Sharia well known that of age and sanity are factors in anything, you know, to make it wajib upon you. The fourth one is he must be free. It doesn't matter in our times, everyone is free, alhamdulillah. There's no such thing as slavery in general. Fifth one also, same religion, common sense, you know. A non-Muslim father cannot be a wali to her Muslim daughter, okay? Makes sense. I mean, the Muslims are walis of the Muslims. Okay. Now the sixth one, what do I mean by adala? This is what we have to discuss now. And this is a big ikhtilaf here. What exactly qualifies as integrity? Okay. Most ulama, for example the scholars of hadith, they say that integrity, adala, means that he must be performing the requirements of Islam and leaving the major sins. So he must be praying five times a day, fasting the month of Ramadan, giving zakah, and leaving the major sins such as zina, you know, such as killing, such as stealing, such as fornication. Okay, so if he does this, he is considered adil or integral. But when it comes to nikah, the scholars have been even more lax than this. When it comes to the matters of nikah, the scholars have been more lax to this. This is because of the fact that most men do not meet these criteria in our times. The fact of the matter is most men don't pray 5 times a day. Okay? And most men are really involved in major sins, especially in America, for example, interest. Many men are involved in interest. Okay? And this is one of the major, major sins. Okay? Their house might be on mortgage, their car might be on mortgage. So when it comes to nikah, the scholars have been a bit lax. And they said that as long as, you know, his adala is not going to cause him to get his daughter married off in any reason. For example, he's taking drugs and he just gets his daughter married to any person that proposes, a fasiq, an evil person. This type of adala, in general, he must be, some type of integrity must be with him. Some type of Islamic integrity. Okay? For example, if he's a murtad, openly says, I don't believe in Islam. Obviously. Or he's, you know, he says Islam is something of the past, I don't need to deal with it. I might be Muslim by birth, but I don't care about it. These type of thing obviously excludes him from adala. But in general, as long as he is a Muslim, inshallah, we'll include him in adala. As long as he's a Muslim and he's concerned for the religion, you know, we'll include that inshallah he is adil. Now what do we mean by the seventh category? Rushd. How do we translate rushd as? The seventh thing is? Capable of making decisions. What we mean by this is that, just like, for example, a person, if you want to trust him with some money, okay, you will want to test, is he capable of handling that money in a good manner? Is he wise in his investments? Okay, we're not talking about his sanity. He might be sane, but he might not be well with money. He might not be good in handling money. Okay, he might be baligh, but he might not know how to make the proper investments with money. So when we're talking about nikah, rushd, what the seventh category of you know, what he requires, what we imply or what we mean is that the person must be capable of looking after the interests of the girl. He must have that common sense, if you like, to look after the interests of the girl. That he must know what is for her good and what is for her bad. So when a proposal comes, he can analyze the person. Will he be suitable for my daughter or the person that I am the wali of or not? Okay? So in other words, he must have something called common sense, if you like. Okay, I mean, it doesn't require a PhD. Just, is this person going to be compatible with my daughter? Is he suitable religiously, Islamically, financially? You know, all the criteria are good for my daughter? Yes or no. He's capable of making this decision. Basically, you want to call it common sense, you can call it common sense. Okay? But common sense is different from sanity. A person might be sane, right? But he might not have this type of capability. So this is why we include it as a separate category. So is this clear? The seven categories that everyone you must have. Okay? Now, okay, we're going to come into that situation. What does she do? Okay, now we've talked about the characteristics of the wali. Now, who is a person's wali? Who is a woman's wali? First and foremost, without any doubt, is her father. The woman's father, if he meets these seven criteria, he is her wali. This is without any doubt, and he has the strongest wilayah, the strongest waliship, if you like. No other person can be as strong of a wali as the father. Okay, this is by ijma', by unanimous consensus. The first person is the father. The girl's father is her wali. If the father is not present, suppose he is dead or missing or presumed dead or unknown whereabouts, okay, or he doesn't meet one of these conditions, like he's not a Muslim, then it moves to the father's father, the grandfather's, okay? If they also are not present or they don't fulfill these seven criterion, then it moves to the son. How can it move to the son? A widow, exactly. Yeah, a woman was divorced and she has a son that is baligh and meeting of age. It moves to the son or the son's son continually. Okay? If they two are not present, then it moves to the brother, the full brother, then the stepbrother, then the half-brother. We talked about this last week. What is the full brother? What is the half-brother? What is the stepbrother? Okay? It moves to her brother. If the brother is also not present, it moves to the brother's sons. Okay? Likewise, if the brother's sons don't meet the criteria, they move to the uncles, and they move to the uncle's sons. And then finally, when you're out of all relatives, okay, all relatives from the father's side, by the way, the wali always is in the father's side, not in the mother's side. The wali of the girl is always in the father's side. So when we say uncle, we mean father's brother. Okay? We mean father's brother, not mother's brother. And when we say uncle's son, we mean father's brother's sons. If all of these relatives, either they don't exist, or they don't meet these criteria that we talked about, they don't exist, then the wali moves to the leader, the Muslim leader. Okay? So for example, if you're in a Muslim country, it will move to the court of law. In any Muslim country, the wali automatically becomes the court of law. Okay? In a non-Muslim country, I asked the scholars about this. Sheikh Uthaymeen, Hafizullah, he said that the wali is the Islamic center closest to her. So for example, in Houston, it will be ISGH. ISGH would be then the wali of a convert girl, for example. A girl converted, none of her family relatives are Muslim. Her father, her son, if she has one, her brothers, her uncles, none of them Muslims, her wali automatically becomes ISGH. Okay? So in order for her to get married, she must then get the approval of ISGH or whatever. If she's in a different city, the local imam, the local community, the leader of that community becomes her wali automatically. In a Muslim country, no problems. You go to the Islamic court. In a non-Muslim country such as we're living in, her wali automatically becomes the Islamic center closest to her area or her house. Okay? So the wali must be present though. This is the point. Someone has got to be a wali. And if they don't even have an Islamic center, suppose they're in some small community or village, doesn't have an Islamic center or masjid, then any Muslim that meets these criteria can become her wali. Okay? But the wali must be present for the marriage to go forth. Now suppose there is a wali, for example, the father. Okay? And there's another wali, for example, the brother. Who has priority? Obviously the father has priority. So it is not allowed. We mentioned a whole series of categories. It is not allowed to move to the next stage if there is a person present in the first stage that meets the criterion. So a girl wants to get married. Her father says no, her brother says, okay, I don't mind, it doesn't matter. If the father meets these criteria, okay, if the father meets these criteria, and he is a Muslim, obviously the seven criteria are met, and he is alive and present, it is not allowed to move to a further category of wilayah, of walishib. It has to be in this order. Okay? And it is not allowed to, the marriage contract is not valid if you use a further wali when a closer wali is present. Okay? If you use a far wali and a close wali is present, the marriage contract is not valid. Especially with regards to the father. All the ulama have unanimous consensus. The father has a unique status above all other walis. The father in particular has a unique status over all other walis. Okay? So we talked about the levels of walis, how they go about. Okay? Also, you should know if the father is present, or any wali that's closer, and he allows another person to be the wali, this is also allowed. Okay? So for example, a sister is here, her father is in Connecticut or Pakistan or Zimbabwe. Okay? He's not present physically. Or even he is, but you know, he can't be the wali for some reason, or he doesn't want to be. It's allowed for the father to say, I appoint brother Ahmed or brother Muhammad or brother so-and-so, who does meet these seven criteria, to be your wali. So the father can give up his wilaya also. Okay? And this comes in handy, for example, if he's thousands and thousands of miles away. Okay? Even though, like we'll discuss, he doesn't have to be physically present for the marriage ceremony, but still, it's up to him. He can say, I have a good friend in that city, he'll be your wali. Okay? I give my wilayah over to him for your marriage. Okay? So if one of the walis, the main wali, agrees to hand over his wilayah to another person, as long as that person meets these criteria, it's also allowed. Okay? So this is a convenient thing that we should know of if we ever get into this situation. The father or whoever is the wali can hand over the wilayah. It's his choice, it's his right to hand over the wilayah to anyone that meets these criteria. Okay? Now, how do you remove the wali though? How do you remove the wali? Why would we want to remove the wali first of all? He's not doing his job properly. Yeah, he's not doing his job. Okay? Or he doesn't meet the seven criterion. Well, Islamically speaking, you have to go to a court of law to do it. The qadi, the judge, has to remove the wali. So for example, if the father is a fasiq, an evil person, okay, and the girl is scared that she might not get the proper suitor because her father is not going to look at the Islamic characteristics, for example, then they have to go to a court of law, and the judge then becomes the wali of the girl. Or he will appoint another person to be the wali. So you must go to a higher authority to remove the wali of the father. Okay, the problem arises in America when we don't have a court of law. Okay, and I don't have a solution for this. There is no solution as far as I know. I mean, You're giving him powers that he doesn't have. The leader of the community does not have the status of a qadi. The qadi has the right to enact rulings that the leader doesn't. Okay, the qadi, for example, can say this person is going to be flogged to death. Okay, or stoned to death. Or his hand's going to be cut off. He has that power. The ISGH Imam doesn't have that power. Because you need an Islamic state behind you. Okay? Now when we're living in a non-Muslim state, such as America or England or whatever, we have these problems that are cropping up that didn't exist in the past. Okay? No one really has come out and given a good answer for this. It doesn't exist in America. Really? I don't know. I didn't hear about this, you know. This is definitely a problem that has to be addressed and solved at a national level. Okay, at a national level. And this is very relevant, especially in America. For example, the girl will say that my father is not a practicing Muslim. He couldn't care less about the proposal if the brother is practicing or not. He takes drugs or he takes alcohol or he does this or that. I don't want him to be my wali. Okay, what is to be done in this situation? This is definitely a national problem that needs to be resolved. And the books of fiqh, as far as I know, they really don't talk about this, because it never existed before that the Muslims are the minority and they are being ruled by kafir laws. This has never existed really in Islamic society in general. I mean, I'm sure there are some fringe cases, but in general, a whole society of Muslims living in non-Muslims has never occurred before. This is one of the first times in the 20th century where so many millions of Muslims are under non-Islamic law. Okay, this didn't exist before, so the books of fiqh haven't talked about that. What needs to be done is at the national level, our leaders have to go and get fatwa, they have to get procedures of how we deal with the situation, but it is definitely a problem that I don't have a solution for. Okay, how do you remove the wali in a place where there is no Islamic church? This is definitely the problem. Now, you will say the Islamic center. Well, let me tell you what happens. A girl falls in love with a boy falls in love with a girl. Common occurrence in this country. Okay, the father says no for legitimate reasons. Legitimate reasons. Okay, there might be some reason that, you know, we're going to talk about these reasons in the next lecture. He's allowed to say no to. The girl, because of her love, and the boy, because of his love, they just go to the local masjid or the local imam. The imam says no. They go to another imam. They go to another one. They basically hunt and search for someone that finally says yes, and they do the marriage contract. And I know of situations and cases where this has been done. Okay? So they then abuse the principle. In principle, you might be right that the ISG's leader or imam should have this right. But practically speaking, this leads to many problems. Many problems. Okay? And I know of a case in Houston where, you know, the local community just allowed it to occur, and the father had a legitimate reason for saying no. And the community leader, because he didn't know anything about fiqh, he was fine, I'll let you guys get married. And he took over, and this caused a big problem in the community and amongst his family in particular. Okay, so this causes many logistical problems if you say that the ISJ leader can become the wali. Okay, that is why I asked the ulama, and I asked one of the major ulama of Medina. He said, I don't know. I don't have a solution to this. It's a unique situation. Who is going to be? Because the judge now, he's going to be impartial, and he is an alim. The qadi, he is an alim in fiqh. He knows what to look at. The ISJ imams and zones, I mean, all due respect, they don't have any knowledge in fiqh. Neither are they qualified to be judges. Okay, so because of this, you get the logistical problems. That's why, Allahu A'lam, I say. Allahu A'lam. You know, try to get the wali to agree, by any means possible. Try to get the wali to agree, if it needs to be done. So this is then the third shart of nikah. What is the first shart? Going back to our lecture. Huh? Yeah, the first shart is, specify the bride and the groom. The second shart is, they're allowed to marry. There's no problem between the two that prevents them from getting married. Okay, and we talked about that the last week, the last Wednesday lecture. The third shart is, the wali must be present, okay? The wali must be present, and there are explicit hadith and Quranic ayat to prove this. For example, the Quranic verse I didn't mention, Allah says in the Quran, وَلَا تَنْكِحُ الْمُشْرِكَاتِ حَتَّى يُؤْمِنُ وَلَا تُنْكِحُ الْمُشْرِكِينَ حَتَّى يُؤْمِنُ. And don't, basically the verse translates as, don't let your daughters marry mushrikeen until they accept Islam. Don't be the wali of a person, of a girl, that is going to get married to a non-Muslim. So Allah is talking to whom now? The men, the wali. And He is saying, don't let your daughters or your people that you're in charge of get married to mushrikeen. So it means they have the right. They are the ones in charge of the marriage. Okay? That's the proof for the fact that you need a wali. Okay? Likewise, the hadith is very explicit. La nikaha illa bi wali. There is no nikah except with a wali. No nikah. Whether the girl is a virgin or not, the Prophet didn't specify. It's open. No nikah except with a wali. Likewise, Aisha reported that the Prophet said, any woman that marries without a wali, her marriage is void, her marriage is void, her marriage is void. Three times he said this. And this is an extreme thing, the Prophet is repeating it three times. Any woman, whether she's virgin or widow, doesn't matter. If she marries without a wali, then her marriage is void, her marriage is void, her marriage is void. And this is also reported in the books of the Sunnah, authentic hadith. And we talked about the shurut of the wali, and that every wali must meet the seven shurut. Okay? He must meet the seven shurut, and it is not allowed for a person to get married in the presence of a far wali when a near wali is present. Okay, you must go in this order. The father and then the father's father. The son and then the son's son. You know, goes on. And then the brother, the full brother, the stepbrother, the half-brother. Then the brother's children, the brother's sons, excuse me. Then the uncle, the father's brother. And then the uncle's sons. And then if all of these people are not present, then the wali moves to the local imam, the guardian, the khalifa, whatever it is, the qadi, the judge, whatever it is, if a non-Muslim country moves to the Islamic center. Okay? And we said that it is allowed for the wali to pass on the wali to another person. He can say, you will be the wali for this marriage contract. This is the third shart. The fourth shart in the marriage contract. Let's try to get questions at the end. There will be a question and answer session, inshallah. The fourth shart in the marriage contract is, who can guess? The the approval of both spouses. The approval of both spouses. What do I mean by approval? I mean to accept that the brother wants to get married and the sister wants to get married. The male wants to get married, the female wants to get married. So the fourth condition is that the male and the female, the parties that are involved in the marriage contract, they must agree to the marriage. Okay? So if the man doesn't want to get married, the marriage contract doesn't go in place. If the woman doesn't want to get married to this man, the marriage contract does not go into place. Okay? Now, there are certain, with regards to the male, we'll divide them into two categories. Pre-puberty and post-puberty. Okay? Pre-puberty male, the father can get him married without his consent. He doesn't need to ask. Pre-puberty male. Means the girl, the boy might be 4, 5, 6 years old. Okay? The father can get him married. What do I mean get him married? The marriage contract, yeah. The marriage contract is valid even amongst babies. Doesn't matter. Even amongst babies, the marriage contract is valid. Okay? The contract is valid. Doesn't mean that they're going to have intercourse. It means that the marriage contract is in effect and in place. And this is up to the father of the boy and the father of the girl. Okay? If the father of a boy and the father of a girl agree we're going to get our children married, even though they might be babies or might be pre-puberty, in this case, the father has the right. He doesn't have to ask the child. Okay? Because the father has that right to get his son married before the age of puberty. After the age of puberty, after the child has become baligh, okay, after he has reached puberty, the male, then the father has no right to force him. Then he must make up his own mind whether he wants to get married or not and who he wants to get married to. Okay? Obviously, you know, the Islamic culture has it that the father picks the girl, but then it's up to the boy to accept or reject. Okay? What we call arranged marriages. So the boy must be content and he must be willing and wanting to marry this girl. Okay? Before puberty, it doesn't matter. The father can get them married, and obviously once he reaches the age of puberty, he has the right to annul the marriage. That's another point. But before puberty, the boy can get married without his consent, without his approval. The father can do that. This is with regards to the boy. Now let's get to the girl. Now here's where the ikhtilaf comes. This was no ikhtilaf before. Now the ikhtilaf comes with regards to the girl. With the girl, we'll say three situations. Okay? Three situations with regards to the girl. There are actually four. We're not going to talk about the fourth one. The first situation is, she is a virgin and before the age of puberty. A virgin before the age of puberty. Okay, the first situation, the first scenario. This, by ijma', the father is allowed to marry the girl off. Without her permission, without her approval. A virgin before the age of puberty. Just like the boy. Just like the boy before the age of puberty. Okay, and the proof for this is the incident of the Prophet himself. When he married who? Aisha radiallahu anha. Aisha did not even know she was getting married. She did not even know she was getting married. Like she says that her mother called her in when she was playing with her friends and she was 9 years old. The woman from the Ansar prepared her as a bride and she went to the Prophet himself. She didn't even know. She got married when she was 6 years old before the age of puberty. Okay? She got married when she was 6 years old and when she reached the age of puberty, that's when the consummation of the marriage occurred. Okay? So, it is allowed for the father to marry off his daughter, meaning the nikah. Doesn't mean the intercourse, means the nikah. The nikah can take place when the girl has not reached the age of puberty and her approval is not needed. Okay, her approval is not necessary. However, the girl does have the right in this situation to annul the marriage once she does reach the age of puberty. She has the right, once she does reach age of puberty, she'll say, I don't want to marry this person. So the marriage contract will be null and void. Okay, it will not take place into effect. So this is the first scenario. Clear situation, right? Pre-puberty, virgin girl. Second scenario, post-puberty, virgin girl. There's a virgin girl, never married before, and she is after the age of puberty. Okay? Now, does the father have the right to force her or not? According to which madhab? Huh? On the contrary, the majority of ulama, this is the surprising point, the majority of the ulama, of the Shafi'is, and Hanbalis, and Malikis, and Zahiris, stated that it is allowed for the father to force his virgin daughter that is past the age of puberty into marriage. The only major madhab that said no were the Hanafis. Okay? So now once we sided against them, now we're siding with them. Okay? Alhamdulillah, we're siding with them. But we don't side with the madhabs, we side with the hadith of the Prophet. And whatever the hadith says, this is our madhab. Okay? Now, we say that the Hanafi opinion is the correct one. The Hanafis state that it is not allowed for the father to force the virgin girl that is past the age of puberty into marriage. She must be asked and her consent must be sought. If she says no, the marriage cannot take place. The majority of ulama said if she says no, doesn't matter, the father can still take the marriage, can still go ahead with the marriage. However, clearly from the ahadith, the clear ruling and verdict is that girls that are past the age of puberty have the right to say no. Because the Prophet ﷺ said that the virgin girl, her father will ask her permission. Al-Bikr, the virgin girl, her father will ask her permission. Okay? And her permission is her silence. Her permission is her silence. So we say that, and also the Prophet said that the orphan girl must be asked. The orphan girl, yatima, basically means the virgin girl that whose father died and she was never married before. Okay? The orphan girl, she must be asked and her consent is her silence. Okay? These are authentic hadith in Bukhari and Muslim and many books of ahadith where the Prophet clearly says that the virgin girl must be asked. Now what is the point of asking her if she doesn't have the right of saying no? Right? This is the proof against the majority. What is the point of asking her? Why do you even ask her if the majority say that it doesn't matter whether she says yes or no? What's the point of asking her? So the hadith clearly go against the majority opinion and they side with the Hanafi opinion. Okay? So for one mas'ala, the waliship, we went against the Hanafis. We said, we don't agree with you. For this mas'ala, the point of agreeing or not, we side with the Hanafis. We say, yes, we must take permission of the virgin girl. If the girl says no, then the marriage contract does not take place. Okay? So the father must take permission from his daughter. And the wali, if it's the brother or whatever, he must take permission from the woman before the marriage contract will go into effect and proceed with the marriage ceremony. Now the difference, however, is that the virgin girl, she doesn't need to verbalize. She doesn't need to say yes. All she needs to do is remain silent. Okay? Because when the Prophet ﷺ said that the virgin girls must be asked, now this was something new. Because the Jahiliyyah Arabs, they didn't choose to ask women, they used to get married. The Jahiliyyah Arabs, they would get their daughters married without any questioning. That he would come home and say, you're married to this man, whether you like it or not. Tough luck, okay? Because they would base it on their Jahiliyyah system and culture. So the Prophet came with the religion of Islam and he said, no, you must ask the virgin girls. So then the Sahaba, they asked another question. They said, Ya Rasulullah, the virgin girl, she is very shy. She's not going to say yes. Now that was back in those days. In our times, it's different. This is true, really. I'm not putting women down. This is true. When the virgin girl of today is asked, you want to marry so-and-so, most likely she'll say yes or no. You know, back in those days, there was such a sense of modesty, such a sense of haya, we call it in Arabic, of shame, that she would be embarrassed even to say yes to her father. She would be too embarrassed even to say yes. Okay? So the Prophet ﷺ gave a way out. He said, her silence is her consent. So when she is asked by her father, do you want to marry so-and-so? She remains silent. She remains silent. That is taken as a yes. That is taken as a yes. Okay? So when the wali asks the girl, so-and-so has proposed, I want to say yes to him. If she remains silent, then the marriage contract is in effect. It is valid. So the girls must realize this. The women must realize this. That if they are virgins, okay, their silence means a yes. They just have to remain silent and automatically that is taken as a yes. So they must realize this and be aware of it. Okay? That if they don't say anything, it is a yes. This is different with regards to the divorced woman or the woman who's been married before. She must come out and say yes. If she's silent, it means no. Okay? She must come out and say yes. So this was the second scenario. What are we talking about? Is everyone still on track what we're talking about? Number four, which is consent. We're talking about the three scenarios. The first scenario is? You are confused. Very good. The first scenario is? Virgin that is? Before age of puberty. Second scenario is? Virgin after the age of puberty. Third scenario is what? Non-virgin after puberty. Very good. Okay? That's non-virgin meaning that she has been widowed or divorced. In Arabic, the word is tayyib and it applies to both widows and divorcees. In English, we have to differentiate widow and divorced. But in Arabic, the word is one. Basically, a woman who is not a virgin for a legitimate reason. We're not talking about zina. We're not talking about fornication. We're talking about for a legitimate reason, she is not a virgin anymore. Either her husband divorced her, or her husband died. Okay? Concerning this woman, okay, her consent must be stated. She must say, yes, I agree. And on top of that, she has more right than her wali. This is the point we talked about in the last section also. The wali does not have the right to say no. The wali must be present. He must go ahead with the marriage. But he does not have the right to say no. Okay? This is in contrast to the virgin, where both the girl and the father must agree. Okay? It's like if you like computer language, it's like an if and if. Both must be met. Okay? If the father says yes, and if the girl agrees. Okay? Both these conditions must be met, for the marriage to go forth. If either of the two say no, then the marriage contract will not go forth. However, for divorcees, divorcees or widowed women, in this case, the wali doesn't have to approve. He just has to be present. The approval rests on her shoulders, whether she wants to marry or not. And this goes back to the infallibility of the Sharia, and that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala created women and He knows them better than they know themselves, and that the virgin girl is swayed by her desires and emotions much more than the one who has had experience of marriage. The one who has tasted marriage knows what to look for in a husband. Okay? She will be much more cautious and selective. Whereas the one who has never been married, she is the one that is romantic in her, you know, thoughts and ideas, and she doesn't have the maturity to make that decision. That is why Allah has made it mandatory for the girl to have a wali and not the boy. Okay? The girl has the wali because the wali will take into account factors that she will overlook and go over. Okay? So for the virgin to get married, both parties must agree. The girl and the wali. For the non-virgin to get married, the wali has to say yes to whatever the girl says. The girl says, I want to marry so-and-so. The wali has to be there and conduct the marriage ceremony. He doesn't have the right to say no. And this is the meaning of the Prophet's hadith. The non-virgin has more of a right concerning herself than her wali. And the virgin must be asked, and her consent is her silence. There's a famous hadith in Bukhari and Muslim in many books, that the non-virgin, the widowed and the divorcee, she has more right concerning herself, meaning her marriage, than her wali does. Her wali cannot say no. Okay? But the virgin still has a right, and she must be asked. And her silence is her consent. Her silence is her approval. Okay, so these are four now shurut. We have one left, and the last one is that two witnesses must be present. Two witnesses must be present. The Prophet ﷺ said, لا نكاح إلا بولي وشاهد عدل. This is reported in Abu Dawood and other books. There is no nikah except with a wali and two adil witnesses. We define adil. Who remembers what adil is? No, adil, not balagh, adil. Just, Islamic integrity. Okay, Islamic integrity. So two witnesses must be present for the marriage contract to take into effect. Okay, these witnesses, they must be male. Number one, they must be male. Number two, they must be of age. Number three, they must be sane. Okay, they must be sane. And number four, they must have integrity. Adil. In other words, they must be saying their five prayers, avoid the major sins. Okay, so when a person gets married, he should make sure that the two people that are witnessing the marriage contract are people of integrity, of honor, of character, of morale, that they are good practicing Islam, they are avoiding the major sins. Because the Prophet said, there is no nikah except with a wali and two witnesses of adil, meaning of integrity. So you should look at your people that witness the marriage contract, they should be people of integrity, that they are pious, practicing Muslims. Okay, so people should choose practicing Muslims to be their wali. Likewise, their witnesses. The witnesses have to be male. This is because Az-Zuhri stated that it is the sunnah of those that came before us. Az-Zuhri, when did he die, by the way? I'm asking because we went over this in the month-long lecture many, many times. Sometime before 1420. Funny. Az-Zuhri died 129, I think, or 126. Okay. Az-Zuhri died in the 120s of the Hijrah. In other words, the second generation after the Sahaba. Okay. So Az-Zuhri stated that it was the sunnah of those before us, the Sahaba and the Tabi'een, that they would not accept the testimony of women, the Shahada of women, when it came to Nikah and Talaq and punishments, meaning like zina and stealing and murder. You would not accept the testimony of a woman. This is something that the scholars have stated, that the testimony of a woman is not accepted in these three things. That no matter how many women are there, you don't accept the testimony in marriage, in divorce, and in Islamic crimes or punishment. You need the testimony of two men. Okay, women's testimony are accepted in other fields such as economic transactions. Allah says that one man equals two women. Okay, also in when it comes to breastfeeding, foster feeding, the testimony of one woman is sufficient. Okay, the testimony of one woman is sufficient. Why? Because obviously she's the one that did the breastfeeding. Now no man would have seen her do the breastfeeding in general. So the testimony of one woman is sufficient. When it comes to the testimony, there are different categories of testimonials. Some of them you need only men, some of them men and women, some of them only women. Okay? So for example, breastfeeding, you need only women to testify. But for the marriage contract, you only need women to testify. Men to testify. Okay? Two men must testify. So these are the five shurut of nikah. Everyone clear on this? What is the first shurut? Specify specify male and female. They are known. The bride and groom are known. Second shart. Very eager, mashallah. You have a few years left, you know, you can digest this information. The second shart is that there is no prohibition for the man and the woman to get married. We talked about this in the last lecture. What are the prohibitions? The third shart, someone else. Wali must be present. Okay, the wali must be present no matter what the situation is. The fourth shart. Approval from both spouses. Okay, what is the exception to the fourth rule? Before puberty, exactly. Before puberty. Before puberty, the approval is not necessary. After puberty, the approval is necessary for both the male and the female. This is the correct opinion. Okay? The fifth shart is, two witnesses must be present. So these are the shurut of nikah. What is a shart, by the way? Who remembers? Yes, you're talking so much. What is a shart? Okay, so what is left now? Ruku'. Sujood. Rukun. Rukun. Okay, so these are the five shurut of any nikah. Any nikah must have these five shurut. Now we get to the actual rukun of the nikah. Okay, very simple. Every nikah has two rukuns or two arkans or two ruknains to them, depending on how much Arabic you know. Two rukuns. Okay, combining English and Arabic there. We need two rukuns for every nikah. Jazakallah. We need two rukuns for every nikah. Very simple. The first rukun is the proposal, and the second rukun is the acceptance. The proposal and the acceptance. The first rukun is the proposal, and the second rukun is the acceptance. What are we talking about now? Who understands what we're talking about? The actual nikah, what is it composed of? We talked about the preconditions. These are the five preconditions of nikah. The actual nikah ceremony, what is that composed of? Just two things. Once these five preconditions have been met, we can move on now to the two rukuns. The first rukun is proposal, the second rukun is acceptance. Now, let me ask you, who does the proposing? The woman? Okay, we have the woman. What other options do we have? Let's see. You said the groom. Who else? We have the wali. Okay, the third person now, the wali. The witness does the proposal. MashaAllah. Even better. So, you have anyone else? That was a good one. I didn't even think of that possibility. How about someone in the audience maybe, huh? Someone who came to attend the marriage and Okay, so you're saying the man proposes to the wali, and then the wali accepts. Okay, this is one scenario that the brother mentioned. Any other scenarios in mind? I'm just seeing your general level of Islamic knowledge here. None of these is the correct answer. None of them is the correct answer. And really, this is something that is very... I was guilty of it too. I had no idea that the acceptance of the proposal doesn't involve these parties that we just mentioned. Okay? And this is not ikhtilaf. This is something that is accepted by all the scholars. The proposal comes from the wali. The wali is the one that proposes to the groom. And the groom does the accepting. This is the Islamic way of nikah. Okay? The girl's father proposes. He says, I give to you, Muhammad ibn Ahmed, you know, my daughter, Fatima bint, whatever, okay, in marriage. And the groom says, I accept this proposal. Okay? This is the Islamic way of marriage. Amazingly, most people are absolutely ignorant of this, and I was amongst them until you go and study Islam. And this shows you how sad, how much influenced we are by this culture, you know. We don't even know, there is no ikhtilaf as far as I know about this. It's something that all the scholars talk about. The father, the girl's wali, is the one that does the proposing, okay. And the groom is the one that accepts. Now we have to, don't get confused between two situations. The one situation is that we're interested in a girl. So the boy might propose to the girl's father that I'm interested in marrying your daughter. This isn't the nikah. This is that, are you going to say yes to me or no? Okay? Once the nikah has been arranged, the actual nikah ceremony, the actual nikah, what is that? This is separate from the proposal that was given before. Okay? You want to call that the engagement, you want to call that anything, that's different. The actual nikah has two rukuns to them. The first one is that the girl's wali proposes, the second one is that the groom accepts. What occurred before that depends on culture and custom. okay, the actual nikah takes place, right, on a certain day. This is when this needs to be done. What happened before that, where the brother proposed to the family and the family said yes and they arranged the date and the big party and a walima and a nikah and everything was arranged. Now everyone shows up. They want to see the nikah ceremony. This is what we're talking about. We're not talking about what happened before then. We're talking about the actual 10-second nikah ceremony. The father will say, okay, I give you my daughter in marriage. And the groom will say, yes, I accept. This is what we're talking about. Okay? Well, this goes back to culture. Now, believe it or not, in the good old days, okay, there was no such thing as proposing. The girl's father would have a keen eye on the local bachelors and he would see which one is suitable for his daughter. He would go to the boy. I know this is what everyone dreams about, doesn't occur anymore. He would go to the boy and say, do you want to marry my daughter? You know? And believe it or not, many would say, no, I'm not interested in your daughter, I'm looking for someone better. But these are the good old days, okay? Not like in our days where people would jump up and say, yes! No, this is 1999 now. It doesn't work that way, okay? But the point is we're talking about the nikah ceremony. The actual nikah. What occurs before this is all cultural. Okay? The boy proposes, this isn't a nikah. Where the boy, you know, the boy's parents might call it the girl's parents. This isn't a nikah. These are just the customary things that are done. And it varies from culture to culture. Okay? So... Yeah, let's keep the questions to an end. But let me just point out, since most of the people didn't get married based on this, alhamdulillah, our marriage did take place in my marriage, I made sure that it happened this way. But since most marriages don't take place this way based on ignorance, inshallah, it's alright, you know. But when we know, now we should make an effort to do it the proper way. Okay? Also, we have to realize that implicit proposal is the same as explicit proposal. So when the father is present there and the whole marriage is taking place, it's understood he's saying yes to it. Okay? But the point is we should follow the sunnah, and the sunnah is that the actual nikah we're talking about. Obviously, even the Prophet ﷺ proposed to the women. He proposed to Abu Bakr for Aisha, okay? And Abu Bakr agreed. But the actual nikah is different from the proposal now. You have to understand the difference now, okay? What occurs before the nikah, this is cultural. The man can go up to the boy and say, do you want to marry my daughter? The boy can say yes, and that's it, the nikah is done, if there are two witnesses present. That is the nikah. If, you know, a man came to the person's house, he had no idea. The father just proposed right then and there. Do you want to marry my daughter? And there are two witnesses present. The man says yes. Then nikah is complete. This is the bare minimum nikah requirement. Okay? With the five conditions have been met, and the acceptance and proposal, the two rukuns have been done. End of story. So the Islamic proposal is very simple. Do you need a marriage contract? No, you don't. We just talked about these two rukuns. You don't need to have it in writing. If you do, it's very good. But you don't need to have it in writing. As long as the two witnesses were present and they heard the proposal and the acceptance and the five shurut have been met that we talked about, the marriage is valid. Okay? You don't need a marriage contract. You don't need anything fancy. You don't need to go to a court, anything. Nothing is mandatory. Okay? The groom does not have to be present. The girl does not have to be present. The wali doesn't have to be physically present. It can be done over the phone. Believe it or not, I've done this. I was a witness to an international marriage in Medina. It's a long story. But the girl was in one place, the boy was in one place, the wali was in another place. And the two witnesses were in Medina. Okay, so we did a marriage contract over the phone. Okay, where we called up the wali, and the wali obviously had known about this, and we got the acceptance and proposal from there, and we listened to it. Okay, so they don't have to physically be present in one place. They just have to be present somewhere. Okay? So that was a good point. They don't have to physically be present. The wali doesn't have to physically be there. If he's in Timbuktu and he gives his call up that it's fine and the two witnesses agree, that's fine. Okay? But the point is, even then you should follow the sunnah, and the wali should propose to the groom that I offer you my daughter or my whatever it might be, the relationship might be my sister or whatever in marriage. Do you accept? And then the groom says, yes, I accept. And the two witnesses have to witness this. Okay, even if it's international, it should still be followed in the Sunnah manner. Okay, now many scholars they said it has to be in Arabic, but this is not true. The correct opinion is it can be in any language, the language of the time, and you use any word. There's a long discussion in the books of fiqh. What word can you use when it comes to marriage? Okay, and the correct opinion is that it goes back to your culture and custom. Okay, use words that are clear and unambiguous. The scholars go into a long discussion about what if the wali says, I give you my girl, or you can own my daughter. I mean, words that are vague, okay? Just, we don't have really get into discussion of that. We say that in marriage contracts use clear phrases. I give you my daughter in marriage. Clear, no difference of opinion what marriage means. Okay? The books of fiqh, they all have chapters about vague marriages. We're going to skip over that. And we'll say that we don't have to talk about it, inshallah. Anytime a marriage takes place, be serious and use the proper words. One final note. There is no such thing as joking when it comes to marriage. Okay? The Prophet ﷺ said three things. Whether you are serious or joking, they will still be in effect. Three things. Whether you are serious or joking, they will still be in effect. Marriage, divorce, and taking a woman back in divorce. Okay? Three things. Whether you are serious or you are joking, it doesn't matter. Islamically, they will still take into effect. So this is a very, whatchamacallit, very important that we know. A brother, a father might joke with a boy that, oh, you want my daughter in marriage? Just joke. And the boy says, yes, I do. And there are two witnesses present. Believe it or not, that is a marriage. Why, it happened with yours. Believe it or not, that is a valid marriage. Because the Prophet ﷺ said three things, their seriousness is serious and their joking is serious. Likewise, divorce, by the way, on a more serious note, if a husband divorces his wife jokingly, this is a real divorce. This shows you the sanctity of the marriage. You don't joke around when it comes to marriage. Okay? Yeah, well, we already talked about that. If you came in at the proper time, you would have known about this. We talked about the five shurut of nikah. Marriage, divorce, and taking back in divorce. Meaning that when a man has divorced his wife, okay, there is something called an iddah, a waiting period, which we're going to talk about, inshallah, in a few weeks, okay? In this waiting period, the man has the right to take the wife back, okay? If he jokes with her and says, okay, you're my wife again. Even if he's joking, she is his wife again. Okay? And this shows you all these three things are related to marriage. This shows you the sanctity, the holiness of marriage. That you're not even allowed to joke about these things. And this is very severe for the brothers. Brothers, careful about using the word divorce with your wife. Careful. If you say the word divorce with your wife, you know, you say that, oh, you know, I'll divorce you, and you're joking and you're laughing. It doesn't matter. That is a divorce. That is one divorce. Three strikes, you're out. You know that. In divorce, three strikes, you're out. If you joked about one of them, that leaves you only two. So be careful, brothers. Allah has given you a responsibility. Divorce is in the hands of the men, not the women. We're going to talk about that when we get to divorce. Women don't have the right to divorce anyway. They don't have the right. Men, they have the right of divorce. So Allah has given you this responsibility. Careful when you use this word. Okay? If a man says, even in a joking manner, or in an anger, that you're divorced, then the woman is divorced. Okay? So you have to be very careful when it comes to this word of divorce. Okay? Now, one last point before we break up for question and answer. We've talked about the five shurut of nikah. We've talked about the two arkan of nikah. Okay? Everyone clear about these seven things? Okay. One final footnote, if you like, which is very important. And actually, it would have been better if I had mentioned this before we started, but inshallah, قَدَّرَ اللَّهُ مَا شَاءَ فَعَلَ. Suppose, okay, the mas'ala we're talking about is a proposal upon a proposal. A proposal upon a proposal. What do I mean by that? I mean a brother has proposed for a sister's hand, okay? He has proposed to the father that, are you interested in me as a possible son-in-law? Okay? Is it allowed for another person to propose to this same family or not? This is what we're talking about now. So it's a side point which is related to what we're talking about. We're going to divide this into a few scenarios, okay? We're going to divide it, firstly, before the proposal that the brother gave. Suppose, for example, you have a friend, okay? And the friend tells you he's interested in proposing to that girl's family. He hasn't done so yet, okay? Now, he hasn't actually done the proposing. This is before the proposal. In this case, you can go ahead and propose, okay? You can go ahead and propose. You can, because he hasn't actually done the proposing yet. Or you might hear through other sources he might be interested. Or he says he's interested in this girl. Okay? It doesn't matter. He hasn't done the proposing yet. Go ahead and propose if you want. Okay? Wait. It's a totally different topic. Let's get back to this thing. Inshallah, we'll talk about that next Wednesday, inshallah. This Wednesday. So, in other words, basically, this category is before he proposes. Fine, go ahead. Second category, he has proposed, but then he has changed his mind. Okay? So the man proposes, and then he says, well, no, I don't want to marry this girl anyway. So he changes his mind, he rejects himself, his own proposal. Okay? So in this case, obviously it is allowed. Third category, which is probably the more common one, the girl refuses. The man proposes, and the girl says, are you out of your mind? No way. Okay? Clear, flat rejection. In this case, is it allowed for the other person to propose? Of course, yes. It is allowed for the other person to propose. Okay? Fourth scenario. The boy proposes, and the girl agrees, but they haven't yet married. The girl agrees, and they've set a marriage date and everything. They haven't yet married, though. In this case, also, it is not allowed. Not also, but it is not allowed to propose. By ijma', it is not allowed to propose. Okay? The Prophet ﷺ said, no suitor. What is a suitor? It's not a man who wears a suit. It is the one who proposes, the male who is the male who wants to marry the girl. No suitor should propose on top of another suitor's proposal. In other words, no Muslim should propose when his Muslim brother has already proposed to that family. Okay. There's a very good question, actually. It's a very good question, and there's a big ikhtilaf about this. Okay. How does that scenario take into place? Suppose you're interested in a Christian girl, okay, and a Christian has proposed to that girl. Can you propose on top of the Christian's proposal? There's a big ikhtilaf because the Prophet said no Muslim should propose on top of another Muslim's proposal. I.e., Christians, can you propose on top of them or not? Ikhtilaf. Anyway, that's a different question. That's a different question which, like I said last week, don't think of Christian girls, okay? For many reasons, don't think of non-Muslim girls, okay? Yeah, let's try to finish this up. So this is the fourth scenario, okay? The fifth scenario is that the brother has proposed to the sister, okay? The man has proposed to the girl. Now the second man has taken permission from the first man. Okay, the second man has gone up and said, can I also propose? Okay? It does sound funny, no one's going to say yes, but the Prophet ﷺ said, no man should propose on top of another man's proposal until he leaves or he gives him permission. Okay? Until he leaves or he gives him permission. So, if you know that, for example, Ahmad has proposed to Fatima, you want to also propose to Fatima. They haven't agreed to the marriage. She's still thinking about it. You have to go to Ahmad. Right? You should not have to, excuse me. You should go to Ahmad and get his permission. Do you allow me to propose also? And then she will choose which of the two she wants. Okay? So this is which scenario now? Fifth one. So by ijma', once he allows him to propose, he can propose. The sixth scenario, which is the most common one and the biggest ikhtilaf also, is that when he has proposed and she is still thinking about it and you don't get his permission. Okay? This is the one where there is the quote-unquote juicy ikhtilaf here. Okay? When he has proposed, okay? When the boy has proposed to the girl's family, okay? He has proposed to the girl's family. They have not given him a yes or a no. And neither has he withdrawn his proposal, nor has he given permission to anyone else. You haven't gone and asked him. Okay? So this is the common scenario. You found out you were interested in marrying, you know, a sister. You found out that another person proposed. And they're still deciding. So you quickly want to propose in this interim time. They haven't decided, yes, we're going to get married. This is the marriage date and everything. They're still thinking about the proposal. Okay? So this is where there's an ikhtilaf. Many ulama, I think the Hanbalis, they say no. And some of the ulama, they say yes, it is allowed. Okay? And this goes back to their ijtihad. And I don't want to give a final verdict because both opinions have good evidence to them. You know, both opinions use the same hadith. They use the same hadith and they interpret it both ways. Okay? The hadith that I use is that no person should propose on top of another proposal. Okay? Exactly, that's the point. It doesn't say whether she answered or not. So then most of the ulama, they say, it doesn't matter whether she answered or not. The point is that when you do so, you're going to cause ill feelings between the two men. How would you like it? You propose to a girl, and then as soon as someone finds out, they also propose to that girl. Isn't it going to cause some hatred towards that, and some enmity towards that? Okay? So some ulama, they go back to this reason. This, the very good point that the brother brought up. The hadith doesn't mention anything. Other ulama, they say what is meant by this hadith is that when they have agreed to become married. Okay? What we call in America an engagement. Now realize there's no such thing as an Islamic engagement in the sense that it doesn't allow things that weren't allowed before. Okay? There's no such thing as an engagement in Islam. There's only one thing that changes, and that is that no other person can propose for that girl. Okay? So some ulama, they use this hadith for the quote-unquote engagement. But they say if they're still thinking about it, it's allowed to propose. Okay? Now there's a big ikhtilaf here, and Allahu A'lam, perhaps you could say that it is allowed for him to propose because of the fact that the girl should know who's interested in her. Okay? The girl should look at her options. That suppose the girl is also interested in Ahmed, but he didn't propose and Muhammad proposed. Okay? She doesn't know Ahmed's interested in him, in her. Okay? So when Ahmed finds out that Muhammad proposed, perhaps you could say from this reason that it's better that he does propose so that the girl knows who is interested in her and then she can make the best choice available. Okay? But I do say that this is a, you know, big controversial issue. Ulama have ikhtilaf over this and they have good evidences. And I'll give you a way out. No one says you have to ask whether someone's proposed or not. Just go ahead and propose. In other words, what you don't know won't hurt you. Okay? There's a sly way out, but it's definitely a way out. Okay? What about for your daughter if someone proposes? No, no, no. Now, this is a different scenario now. This is a different situation. We're talking about from the suitor's perspective. As for the father's perspective, if he gets another proposal, it's up to him. He can say yes or no. No, you don't have to ask if there's another proposal or not. Because you don't know. It's not your requirement to go and ask everyone in the world, did they propose to the sister or not. Also realize proposals in general are secret because people are humiliated when they're said no to. Okay? No, this is a fact of life. Both brothers and sisters. Okay? In general, proposals are done very secretively. You'll just tell your father or your mother to call up, and if they accept, then you will make it public. Okay? So, many people won't even tell you that they proposed because they're scared of an embarrassment. If you happen to know, then this hadith applies to you. If you don't know, yani, you don't have to, if you're interested in marrying a girl, you don't have to go and ask every guy in the community, have you proposed to this girl or not? No one has said this. Okay? Yeah, I mean, what you don't know won't hurt you. It's an Islamic rule too. I mean, if you don't know it, you don't have to go around asking everyone about this, specifically about this matter. Okay? Now, if you do, out of the fear of Allah, yes, of course it is better, no doubt. If you do, and you're doing so out of wara and taqwa, this is better. But if you don't, and you don't know anyone has proposed to her, go ahead and propose. Okay? It's not a requirement of you to ask every single bachelor in the community, have you proposed to this girl or not. Neither is it feasible. Okay? No, it's related to the fact, how do you understand this hadith? Do you understand this hadith as applying to after they have agreed or before they have agreed? Okay? Yeah, if the sisters have questions, they can write them down now and pass them on. Okay, now before we conclude, just a summary of what we've done. We first of all talked about the five shurut of nikah. The first one was, specify both male and female. We have to know who we're talking about. Common sense. Second one was, they're both allowed to get married. Again, common sense. And we talked about this in detail. Last topic. Third one was, there must be a wali present. Now, who is the marriage contract between then? The marriage contract is between who then? The wali and the groom, exactly. See, this is the point, goes back to our two rukuns, okay? The marriage contract, unlike in America, it's not between the man and the girl. It is not between the bride and the groom. It is between the groom and the wali. The marriage contract, the actual contract is between the groom and the wali, and that is why we need to have a wali present. Okay, even if it's a divorcee, even if it's a widowed woman, who is going to be the ijab and the qubul, the acceptance and the proposal? The man and the man. The wali and the groom. Okay? So, hold on, let's get this. The fourth condition is that both the groom and the bride must agree to the marriage. Okay? And we said that the correct opinion is that even if she is a virgin, she must still be consenting to the marriage. It is not allowed for the father to force her to get married, despite the fact that the majority of scholars did say that it is allowed. But we say that the hadith are clear that the father must ask the virgin girl, and her silence is her consent. Whereas for the divorcee, her silence is not her consent. Her silence means nothing. Just like if we, you know, in any other contract. But specifically for the virgin girl, if she remains silent, this is taken as a yes. Okay, and there's something I find, unfortunately, culture has dictated that the two witnesses must come and listen to the wali. No, the two witnesses the girl. The two witnesses never have to see the girl. The two witnesses never have to see the girl or hear anything from her. Because the marriage contract is between the wali and the groom. So the two witnesses have to be present for these two. They don't have to go into the girl's side and, you know, this is something I find, unfortunately, that occurs out of ignorance. No, the marriage contract is not between the girl and the boy in the first place. And then in the marriage contract, even in, I think, many Islamic institutions and organizations, the marriage contract, the signature is between the girl and the boy. This is not true, the proper. The actual contract should be between the wali and the groom. Okay? This is something that, unfortunately, is due to our influence of Western and the values they have here. But Islamically, no. It's between the wali and the groom. So the fourth is that there must be consent. And the fifth, that there must be two pious witnesses there. Then we talked about the two rukuns of marriage, and this is the proposal and the acceptance. The proposal is given from whom? By whom? The wali. And the acceptance is from the groom. So inshallah, when we get married for the first time, or maybe even second, third time, let's try to do the sunnah, is that the groom doesn't propose act in the actual nikah. Okay? The groom is the one that accepts in the actual nikah ceremony. Okay? It is the wali that proposes. The wali says, I offer you my daughter in marriage. Do you accept this? And the groom says, yes, I accept. Okay? These are the two rukuns of... Okay, those brothers that don't have wudu should go to wudu now, and sisters likewise. Okay? And then we also concluded with the fact that we should not propose on top of another proposal because of the fact that the Prophet ﷺ prohibited that. Okay.